I'm Vidhi Pathak, and you're listening to Beyond the Books, a podcast dedicated to exploring the beauty of literature and the impacts it has on our day-to-day lives, playing a part in influencing our culture and our collective histories. Let's read, learn, and grow together, discovering truths that apply to our lives way beyond the books. Today, I wish to go back to the very beginning, to the book that started it all for me. There is absolutely no doubt that Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone will always have a special place in my book-loving heart, being the only book that was able to pull me headfirst into the literary world. And I'll be forever thankful of J.K. Rowling for creating such a beautifully constructed universe, full of a cast of dynamic characters, intricate plots, expert parallels to the real world, and invaluable life lessons. For a lot of us, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone is home, a book that opened the doors to so many more, the book that introduced us to the wonderful wizarding world of Harry Potter. Essentially, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone is a children's fantasy story about an orphaned boy named Harry Potter, who discovers that he's a wizard on his 11th birthday. Harry leaves behind his abusive family to go to Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry, a boarding school for children with magical blood. Along the way, Harry meets his two best friends, Ronald Weasley and Hermione Granger, and together, this trio goes on magical adventures. Harry learns a lot about his past and family in his first year, including information about the death of his parents. Harry discovers that his parents were murdered by the evil Lord Voldemort. And while Harry's parents are tragically killed, Harry himself remained unharmed except for an iconic lightning-shaped scar that rested on his forehead, giving Harry the infamous name, the Boy Who Lived. As the story progresses, Harry discovers that Hogwarts itself is guarding the precious Sorcerer's Stone, a powerful artifact that produces an elixir that extends someone's lifespan. Fearing that the stone may just fall into his rival, Lord Voldemort's hands, Harry and his friends journey to find the stone and protect it before it's too late. The story begins through the perspective of Harry's uncle, Vernon Dursley, as he goes about his day. And I think that this is a really brilliant way to introduce the existence of the wizarding world to the readers, because we are just as unfamiliar with it as Vernon Dursley is. And as Vernon sees wizards celebrating Voldemort's downfall and Harry Potter's survival, we as the readers are also able to assess the significance of this moment in relation to why Harry is so special. We see how shallow the Dursley family is, full of a superficial standard that is suspended in this idea of normalcy. And that night, when Hagrid brings one-year-old Harry to the Dursleys, we as the readers already have an idea of how much of an outrage will be put up by the Dursley family because of their strict adherence towards being perfectly normal, and how they'll force Harry to fit that mold. And when we see Harry next, it's a full 10 years later, and it's honestly quite jarring to see how abused Harry really is. We see him living and sleeping in a broom closet filled with spiders, being used as his cousin's punching bag, and the constant target of his aunt and uncle's verbal abuse. And I personally thought that this portrayal of abuse was a brilliant addition by J.K. Rowling, because this topic always seems a little taboo and off-limits for children's literature. We're introduced to this orphan boy, who has spent all his life being told that he's a waste of space, and how he doesn't matter. And this really contributes to his inferiority complex, because he's been so conditioned to believe that he doesn't deserve love and respect by his aunt and uncle. And this really emphasizes how much of an impact family has on a person, and who they are and what they value. And because Harry has grown up thinking of himself as worthless, he's very quick to shut down Hagrid when he shows up 11 years later and informs Harry that he's special. He actually tells Hagrid that he doesn't think he can be a wizard because he's been raised to believe that he can't be important. But on the other hand, I really like how Harry doesn't let that abuse define him. He's never described as being self-pitying, and I think his mindset is really mature for an 11-year-old. I also really love how bold Harry is in speaking out whenever something unfair or mean is being said. Him standing up for Ron and his family when Draco Malfoy offers his friendship really stands out to me here because of how straightforward Harry is when he tells Draco that he can tell the wrong sort for himself. And his complete inability to stay silent is something really admirable too. Harry is just so unconditionally good and has such a powerful moral compass that he's always calling out others when they're doing something unethical or wrong. And this is especially significant because it's hard to be a good person when you've been raised in such a poisonous way. And yet, Harry always manages to stay good. I feel as if a whole chunk of this book is just Harry's mental confrontation with himself. And we really get to see him interact with those ginormous expectations that stem from being the boy who lived, in direct contrast with being brought up and raised with people who insulted his self-worth constantly. This clash is a lot for our young protagonist, and we really see him grapple with these expectations throughout the course of this book. But in the end, I like to think that Harry Potter finds himself and his values at the end of his first year of Hogwarts. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Before the break, we discussed Harry Potter's righteousness and moral integrity. And moving forward, let's analyze some of the finer points of the story. Fantastic element of the story is the sheer amount of world building J.K. Rowling does. She expertly balances out the more serious themes of the story with vivid descriptions of life at Hogwarts and the existence of the wizarding world. This is really interesting when you realize that almost a third of this book doesn't even take place in Hogwarts. To me, this really signifies the separation of the Muggle and wizarding worlds and how they exist in tandem without directly influencing each other. All this beautiful world building really contributes to the overall charm and magic of the Sorcerer's Stone. And I feel like a lot of this book is just an introduction to the magical world itself. The focus on the Sorcerer's Stone and that plotline really does take a backseat during a significant portion of the story. And this is probably the only weakness that I see in the Sorcerer's Stone. The abundance of framing J.K. Rowling does could come off as boring to a first-time reader and lead them to abandon this book for its lack of action. And as a part of the children's genre, this low level of high-intensity action has potential to pull kids away. But for some insane reason, that whole plotline works for the Sorcerer's Stone. Now, a part of that success is probably nostalgia, but I feel like a lot of people like the Sorcerer's Stone because of how normal it is. And hear me out, I'm not saying that going to an old wizarding school is a normal experience that people share, but I'm harping on the fact that a majority of this book focuses on Harry's experience starting out at a new school, a feeling that most of us can relate with. The way Harry meets his best friend Ron Weasley on the train, and how he becomes Harry's first ever friend, how Harry arrives late to class because he gets lost, it definitely makes the story more relatable. What's also notable is how Hogwarts is the only place where we see Harry truly happy. The first and only place where Harry feels understood and accepted. The first place he feels close to his deceased parents. And you can really see the pure joy Harry feels when he rides a broom for the first time, because it is through Quidditch that he feels a connection with his father. And let's not forget that heart-wrenching moment when Harry discovers the Mirror of Erised and sees his parents for the first time. And the realization that Harry's greatest desire is seeing his parents. But there's a great level of wisdom expressed during the scene because we finally get to meet the legendary Professor Albus Dumbledore. And he leaves us with a piece of invaluable life advice when he tells Harry that it does not do well to dwell on dreams and forget to live. Reminding us that getting lost in fantasy can hinder our ability to enjoy the present moment. And what a beautiful idea to live by. I also really admire the concept of adversity creating friendships within this book. Looking back on it, the foundations of Harry, Ron, and Hermione's friendship exist the moment they face the mountain troll together. The sense of camaraderie that stems from this encounter is what makes this moment so memorable to us Potterheads. The book even notes how there are some things you can't share without ending up liking each other, and knocking out a 12-foot mountain troll is one of them. And us knowing that this moment is where the Golden Trio begins is rewarding indeed. Another noteworthy aspect of this book is its defining moments towards the end. When our Golden Trio goes to find the Sorcerer's Stone, we get a moment that exclusively showcases their true Gryffindor selves. Ron's bravery and sacrifice during the chess match accurately represents his values for chivalry and daring. And afterwards, when Hermione tells Harry that books and cleverness don't make a great wizard, but instead, values of friendship and bravery do, she proves her true allegiance to the values of Gryffindor House. But the most prominent exemplification of this is Harry Potter himself. Long after Ron and Hermione have left, Harry faces off against former Professor Quirrell / Voldemort. And Voldemort tries his best to lure Harry into handing over the Sorcerer's Stone, convincing him that if he hands over the stone, Harry will be able to see his parents again. However, Harry refuses. Harry is an orphan boy who's never gotten the opportunity of seeing or interacting his parents, and yet he still declines Voldemort's offer because he knows that it's not the right thing to do. Harry Potter's character is just too good to be true. In the end, everything turns out well and the stone is destroyed, marking the satisfying end to the first book of an international phenomenon. Listen to the second episode of Beyond the Books. I'm your host, Vidhi Pathak, and I hope to see you next time when we discuss Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. To catch the next episode, please subscribe to the show on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. And remember to keep calm and read on.